As many of you know, we at First Baptist use the Revised Common Lectionary to guide our church calendar year. For those who might be unfamiliar with what a lectionary is, it is a structured schedule of scripture readings assigned to specific days or seasons that is a three-year cycle, and it is used by liturgical and mainline churches. The lectionary system is the work of two ecumenical bodies who provide resources for the churches that send representatives to them, namely the North American Consultation of Common Texts and later the International English Language Liturgical Consultation. Responding to widespread interest in the Roman Lectionary of Mass of 1969, many North American churches undertook adaptations and revisions of it for their own use during the 70s. CCT produced a harmonized and reworking of these in 1983 on a trial basis and then revised that for publication in 1992. As the Revised Common Lectionary. It is a helpful tool for us as we plan out our church year and our sermons, but like any tool, at some times it needs to be set aside. Today we were to go to the upper room with the disciples where they were hiding in fear. Christ appeared to them, and then we were to move on to the story of Doubting Thomas. However, I chose to linger on the story in between the resurrection and Thomas. For as good as the lectionary is, there are stories that are skimmed over or left out altogether. We might ask why. Let us begin where the Gospels begin, in the dark, before sunrise, before certainty, before proclamation. The women came to the tomb. If we listen closely, especially through the voices of women, through the silenced, through those pushed to the margins, we may hear it again for what it truly is, the beginning of a new social order. Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, Salome, Joanna, and a few others who remain unnamed, they come carrying the grief in their bodies and spices in their hands. They come expecting death to remain dead, and yet they are the first witnesses. Not the disciples who fled, not the powerful, not the authorized religious voices. Women. Women who are ever present in the care of the embodied Christ. Women who birth, raise, feed, wash, attend, and in the last, tenderly prepare the body of Jesus who they have watched die. Beginning to end, they have been the first witnesses. Recorded in every gospel account, this is another crack in the foundation of patriarchy as we have known it. In a world where women's testimony was not legally admissible, where their voices were discounted, erased, or controlled, God chooses them. This is not incidental, this is theological. The resurrection does not simply defeat death, it reorders authority. Phyllis Trible teaches us to read scripture with a hermeneutic of remembrance, to remember the voices buried beneath the text. And when we remember, when we listen, we realize the resurrection story is a multi-layered story of resistance. The women are not passive listeners or observers. They are agents. They go, they see, they hear, they speak. Do not be afraid, the angel says in Matthew. Go and tell. And they do. But notice, unfortunately, what happens next. They told all of this to the disciples or the apostles, but these words seemed to them an idle tale, and they did not believe them. An idle tale. Dismissed, disbelieved. Does this sound familiar? Letty Russell reminds us that the church has often been a household of freedom that forgot its own calling, replacing mutuality with hierarchy, partnership with control. The women proclaim resurrection, and the first response of the representatives of the institutional church is skepticism. And yet, the story does not end there. Because resurrection cannot be contained by disbelief. Mary Magdalene runs. Peter runs. The beloved disciple John runs. Movement begins and excitement builds. The stone is rolled away. Not just from a tomb, but from imagination. Something new is breaking open. Listen to Isaiah. Here is my servant whom I uphold. He will bring forth justice to the nations. He will not break a bruised reed. He will not quench a dimly burning wick. And then sing to the Lord a new song. Let the desert and its towns lift up their voice. Let all creation rejoice. Isaiah is not speaking about private salvation. This is not about individual escape. This is about justice. This is about restoration, about a reordered world. Resurrection is prophetic imagination made flesh. It is God saying the world as it is, this world of domination, violence, silencing, death, this is not the final word. Rosemary Radford Ruther insists that the resurrection must be understood not as a return to the old order, but as a birth of a new humanity, one grounded in mutuality, justice, and right relationship. And if that is true, then the presence of women at the tomb is not a detail, it is a declaration. The new world begins with those who were excluded from the old one. Let us linger with Mary Magdalene for a moment. In John's gospel, she stands outside the tomb weeping, and she bends to look in. She sees angels, but she does not yet understand. Then she turns and sees Jesus, but does not recognize him. Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you looking for? As Jeremy spoke of on Easter, remember the shovel imagery he shared with us? She thinks he is the gardener. And perhaps she is not wrong, because this is a new creation story. In Genesis, humanity is formed in a garden. In John, resurrection begins in a garden. Jesus speaks her name, Mary. And in that moment, recognition. Elizabeth Schuchler Fiorenza calls this moment a moment of discipleship of equals. Mary's not subordinate here. She is commissioned by Christ. Go to my brothers and say to them, she has become the apostle to the apostles. And yet, how often has her voice been dismissed, rewritten, turned into something else, something lesser than? Jewish theologian Judith Plaskow reminds us that the work of feminist theology is not simply to add women back into the story, but to transform the story itself, to expose the structures that silence them in the first place. So we must ask, what would the church look like if Mary had been truly believed? What would change if the testimony of those long dismissed as telling idle tales was taken seriously? What would resurrection demand of us? Because resurrection is not just something that happened. It is something that is happening. It is something we are all called to embody. Mark's gospel, in its earliest form, ends abruptly. The women flee from the tomb, trembling and astonished, and they say nothing to anyone, for they are afraid. It is an unfinished ending. Why? Perhaps the story is not complete without all of us. Perhaps because resurrection is not a conclusion, it is an invitation. Let us be honest. We live in a world still shaped by tombs, systems that bury people, economies that crush the poor, structures that silence women, erase indigenous voices, marginalize queer bodies, and exploit the earth. We live in a world where the bruised reed is still broken, where the dimly burning wick is often extinguished. And yet, Isaiah dares to imagine a servant who does not break, who does not crush, who brings justice gently but persistently. Jesus embodies that vision, and the resurrection vindicates it. The powers tried to silence him. The empire executed him. The religious authorities colluded. But God said no. No to violence as the final word. No to death as the ultimate authority. No to systems that dehumanize. And yes to life. Yes to justice. Yes to a new creation. But here's the challenge. If resurrection is real, if it is more than metaphor, more than comfort, more than doctrine, then it does demand something of each and every one of us. It demands that we participate in the new social order it inaugurates. Letty Russell speaks of God's table of welcome, where all are invited, where power is shared, where community is built on partnership rather than domination. That is resurrection living. Rosemary Radford Ruther calls on us to dismantle structures of oppression, patriarchy, racism, economic injustice, not as optional activism, but as the very work of salvation. That is resurrection living. Phyllis Trible teaches us to hear the violence, the voices of the violated, silenced in Scripture, and to refuse to let them remain unheard. That is resurrection living. Elizabeth Schussler Fiorenza calls us to build an ecclesia of women, communities of radical equality and justice. That is resurrection living. Judith Plaskow invites us to reimagine tradition in ways that liberate rather than constrain. That is resurrection living. Walter Brueggemann reminds us that hope is an act of resistance against despair. That is resurrection living. So what does this look like here and now? It looks like believing women, not just in theory, but in practice. It looks like creating spaces where marginalized voices are not just included, but centered. It looks like questioning systems that benefit some at the expense of others. It looks like refusing to accept, this is just the way things are. It looks like singing a new song, as Isaiah says, a song that names injustice and imagines alternatives. It looks like showing up at tombs, places of death, grief, and despair, and refusing to leave them unchallenged. It looks like proclaiming, even when others call it an idle tale, Christ is risen, and not just risen, but rising. Because resurrection is not about going back, it is about going forward. The angel says, he is not here. He is going ahead of you. Ahead of you. In Galilee, in the ordinary places of life, in the margins, into the work of building a new world. And so we return to the women, running from the tomb, Afraid, yes, but also filled with great joy, carrying a message that will change everything. Go and tell. That is the first sermon of Easter. Not delivered from a pulpit, not sanctioned by authority, but spoken on the road by women whose voices the world had ignored. And yet, those are the voices God chose. So hear this. If we want to understand resurrection, we must listen to those voices. If we want to live resurrection, we must join them. If we want to proclaim resurrection, we must be willing to challenge the structures that crucify life. Because without justice, resurrection becomes sentimentality. Without transformation, it becomes empty ritual. Without a new social order, it can become an idle tale. But with justice, with liberation, with communities of equality, dignity, and love, resurrection becomes what it was always meant to be. The upside-down turning of the world. The lifting of the lowly. The opening of tombs. The beginning of something new.